I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. African American women are nearly four times as likely to die from childbirth and pregnancy-related causes than white mothers. Black babies are twice as likely to die before their first birthday. What is driving racial disparities in birth outcomes? Can interpersonal and institutional racism have a physiological effect on the health of black women, regardless of their educational and economic status? Linda Villarosa is a contributor to the New York Times. Rebecca Dineen is the assistant commissioner of the Baltimore Bureau of Maternal and Child Health. Andrea Williams is a doula who works with expectant mothers. A conversation about a crisis that is claiming the lives of thousands of women and babies every year. That's coming up when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. There is a chasm, a huge chasm, in infant mortality and maternal mortality between women of color and white women. Today on Midday, we'll explore why it is that statistically, black babies are more than twice as likely to die than white babies, and black women are dying from complications related to childbirth four times more frequently than white women. There are a myriad of reasons that the rates of death due to problems in childbirth differ by race. One of them is that there is a disparity in the way black and white patients are treated in the American healthcare system. Another is that racial prejudice and institutional bias throughout American culture has an adverse effect on the health of people of color. The effect of racism is not just psychological, it is physiological. And nowhere is that effect more acutely demonstrated than in the rates of infant and maternal mortality. A little later in the show, I'll be joined by the woman who leads an initiative of the Baltimore City Health Department called Be More for Healthy Babies. I'll also speak with a doula who works with expectant and new mothers during their pregnancy and into motherhood. But first, my guest is a journalist who has written about this for the New York Times. Linda Villarosa is the director of the City College of New York Journalism Program and the author of a report titled Why America's Black Mothers and Babies Are in a Life or Death Crisis. It was published in the New York Times Magazine last April. Ms. Villarosa, welcome to the show. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Tom. I'm glad to be here.
And listeners, if you'd like to join our conversation, our number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. So, Linda Villarosa, you call this a life and death crisis. Give us the broad outline of what makes you assert that statement.
Well, when I first heard about this story, I actually thought it was incorrect. And a friend who works for the Center for Reproductive Rights was telling me, she said, you know, maternal mortality is a problem here in the U.S. And I argued with her because I thought, no, this is not something that happens in this country with our high-tech, you know, really well, very expensive healthcare. And so she walked me through that, no, we're the only high-resource country where the rate is going up of women who die or almost die in childbirth or related to pregnancy. And so then I was like, well, is it only a question of poor women? Is it people who just really aren't getting adequate health care? And she said, well, no, actually, that isn't correct. It's a problem of black women, at least. A black woman with an advanced degree is more likely to die or almost die or have her baby die than a white woman with an eighth grade education. And she talked about the rates between just that you just said, between black women and black babies and white women and white babies. And I was so surprised and intrigued. That's what got me to write this story.
Yeah, I was equally surprised and intrigued. And I really had to read your piece and several other pieces carefully to be convinced that it was true. I'm thinking in this day and age, we have infant mortality of any even approaching a rate that is of concern, and maternal mortality. These are two different things. This is mothers dying in the process of childbirth or in because of complications due to their pregnancy, or infants dying within a year. You begin your piece that in 1850, 15 years before the end of the Civil War, the ratio of deaths between white women and black women was actually smaller than it is now. I mean, that's wild. That's incredible.
I actually thought, again, that was an error, because I said, how could that be? Black women were actually enslaved, so how could that be? And even though the raw numbers were much higher in 1850, the disparity between black and white women is greater now. So something is wrong here in this country.
So the rates are, for black babies, 11.3 are dying per 1,000 black babies, compared to 4.9 per 1,000 white babies. So statistically, what you're saying is, I mean, obviously a statistic like that is raw and it's useful up to a point, but this ratio, this the fact that there are twice as many black babies are dying than white babies, how does that statistic control or take into consideration these other factors like socioeconomic status or like access to health care or propensity for other diseases that can complicate pregnancies? I mean, is there a way of parsing that out as well?
So what I would say is, if you are poor and you don't have access to healthy food, you don't have access to prenatal care, you don't have access to, there's no hospital in your community, you're in a rural area, we have to travel far, you don't have a lot of physicians and you don't have health care providers, obviously things will be worse for you. But even when, if you factor out those things, the rate is still higher for black women. So it's worse if you're poor, it's worse if you're low-resourced, it's worse if you're super stressed out, but regardless, it's still higher for black women, and it's confusing and hard to understand and sad.
So in the United States, it's now the maternal mortality, the women dying in the process of giving birth or before or after because of complications in a pregnancy. It's worse than it was 25 years ago. Is there a generally accepted reason for that? Why these rates are getting more troublesome rather than less troublesome, given the genius of modern medicine?
Well, I think what's happened is it's improved in other places, but so here, as other countries, even countries much poorer than ours, the rates have gotten better because what they have done is improved their technology and also linked it to women. I think what's happening here is we are not clear on and don't like to talk about the racial disparities. And so it's really the rates of black women that are driving this. And so it's unclear what's happening in this country. But there is increasing worry that black women are the tip of the iceberg. There was a very terrible raid in Iowa on a factory where mostly Latinx people worked. And it was one of the largest ICE raids in history. And so a year after that, the babies born of the people who were involved, but also the people in the community, the low birth weight was up after the raid. And so now there's this worry that it's been studied, infant and maternal mortality has been studied in black women, but is this the tip of the iceberg? And it's really some kind of toxic stress along with racism and healthcare that is causing this problem.
So what is the research saying about this link between institutional racism and childbirth and low birth weight and problems in pregnancy? I mean, is the line being drawn between institutional racism and this particular outcome for women of color? Or is it being drawn between institutional racism and the healthcare system writ large? Is it the same for black men? Is it the same for Latinx men, et cetera?
It's been studied more in black women, and it's in infant and now maternal mortality, but it's also been studied in men for heart disease. It's been studied for longevity. Black men live less years than every other race and gender group across class lines. And so, you know, it's a problem for health, but where it's been studied probably the most is in infant mortality. And it's different, and there are two different things. So one is how you're treated in the healthcare system, and two is how you're treated in society, and how that lived experience of being a black person, especially a black woman, how it hurts the body.
And the term of art in the research, which I believe was coined by a woman that you write about in your piece in the Times Magazine last April, a woman named Dr. Arlene Geronimus. She's at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. The term of art is weathering. Black women literally age in different ways and at different rates of acceleration than white women.
Yes.
And so what does that mean?
Because of the experience of being a black woman in America and race and how racism wears your body down. And what I like about Dr. Geronimus is the term is very poetic. So weathering can mean the way a storm weathers a house, and it chips away the paint, breaks the windows, and makes the frame shaky. But it also is weathering the storm. So it's also about resilience and how you kind of fight back against that and how you wrap yourself around your community and family and you help each other. So I like that you can look at weathering in a two-prong way.
And it's not the sort of stress, the sort of problem that can be relieved. You write about this by sort of, you know, meditation or me time or, you know, the what Sheryl Sandberg and the like might call the lean in approach to this. This is a kind of stress that is, it's visceral. I think you used the term bone deep to describe it. This is a different kind of stress than people who are not women of color don't endure.
Well, it was interesting because I asked very specifically when some of the people who, along with Arlene Geronimus, others who studied it, and the Black Women's Health Study added questions about racism to their, it's a long-term study of 59,000 black women. So they ended up adding questions about racism. So the questions were, do you feel treated differently at work? Or in general, do you feel like people think they're more intelligent than you? Do people move away from you because they feel like they're scared of you? So it was questions like that. Do people talk over you? Things like that. And then also, have you been discriminated against in housing, in your job, and or by the police? And the people with the highest rates of reporting some kind of racism, even the light, you know, the sort of, I'm using quotes, lighter ones, had the highest levels of preterm birth, as well as other health problems, including diabetes.
And this is where the distinction between people in a low or middle or high economic status are the same. The experience of black women and the experience of institutional racism, regular insults and discrimination that white women don't endure or experience in the same way. It doesn't matter when it comes to people of color and women of color that whether you're poor or middle class or even well-to-do, that the experience of discrimination has the same deleterious effect on health.
I think the reason they added the Black Women's Health Study added these questions was because among the researchers, several of them were pregnant at the same time, and the black woman who was a PhD, and she was one of the primary researchers at, I think it was Boston University, she was the only one of the group who had a preterm baby. And so her baby ended up in the NICU, and they were like, wait a minute, we all had babies at the same time. Why is the black woman, who we all have the same level of education, we all are, you know, the same, we work together, why is she the only one that ended up with a problematic, you know, outcome? And her son is fine now. But, you know, so that's why they added those questions, because they started thinking, wait a minute, this is about race? And it was very interesting. I love that story that the women got together and they made a change based on, you know, just observation.
And you write about a woman named Simone Landrum who lost a child, and her experience, not unlike the experience of many women of color, people in her family even, and the father of the child blamed her. The blame gets placed on the woman instead of any other factors. I mean, it seems to be a natural impulse to single out the woman who's had a problematic pregnancy or who dies in the process of giving birth as somehow being responsible for it in and of herself.
I think that's probably it's just so hard to wrap your mind around this happening in our country that is the first thing you assume. It's like, well, what did you do wrong? And in my own pregnancy, I was the health editor of Essence magazine. I was in great health. I've written about infant and maternal mortality, more about infant mortality and how to avoid it. And then I ended up having a problem that only affects people who don't have prenatal care, who drink and smoke or have an infection or quite ill during their pregnancy. And my baby was born of low birth weight, and she's fine now. But, you know, I always thought, what is going on here? And the doctor was immediately saying, what are you doing wrong? And I'm saying, I'm not doing anything wrong. Are you kidding me? I'm the health editor of Essence. I cannot be messing up doing
right.
this. I know what to do.
This is the last thing you're allowed to do wrong, yeah.
No, especially not in public. And so, but never, you know, I knew what I was supposed to be doing right to protect the health of myself and my baby. But I ended up in this problematic, kind of a little bit touch-and-go situation. And so then I always thought, well, what happened here? I know I didn't do anything wrong. And I've certainly heard the stories of many, many, many women after I wrote this piece saying the same thing.
And your baby was born or eventually became healthy after her birth in 1996, right? So your baby's not
yes,
a baby
but
anymore.
She's a 22-year-old. We're going to play soccer together tonight. She's very fit and in great shape and healthy. But at the time, she could fit in the palm of my hand. She was so small.
Well, God bless you both. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. Linda Villarosa is the author of a report in the New York Times last April called Why America's Black Mothers and Babies Are in a Life or Death Crisis. We'll have more on the racial disparities and outcomes for mothers and babies here in Baltimore and beyond after a break. When we return, we'll be joined by Rebecca Dineen. She's the assistant commissioner of the Baltimore Bureau of Maternal and Child Health. She leads Be More for Healthy Babies. That's a city initiative of the City Health Department that helps mothers and their babies. We are delighted. We would be delighted to hear from you, hear your personal experience, and hear your questions and comments for our panel. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, some book suggestions from Heidi Daniel. She's the CEO of the Pratt Library here in Baltimore, as well as Paula Willey. She's a children's librarian, and they'll have some suggestions for books that young readers and old readers alike will enjoy this holiday season. So we hope that you'll join us with some of your favorite book selections tomorrow on Midday. If you're just joining us today, we are looking at racial disparities in birth outcomes in the United States. Why is it that African-American women are disproportionately at risk for complications during pregnancy and childbirth? Research out of the University of Michigan and elsewhere attributes part of the problem to what's known as weathering, a kind of toxic stress that contributes to physical deterioration, which in turn makes giving birth a decidedly riskier proposition for women of color than for white women, regardless of socioeconomic status. Tennis star Serena Williams has spoken about her potentially life-threatening complications during childbirth.
I remember being wheeled back to the operating room because they had to reopen my C-section, and then they had to check for, you know, blood clots and everything. So they were doing all these different tests, and everything was negative. I'm like, listen, I need you to run a CAT scan with dye. because I have a pulmonary embolism in my lungs. I know it. I know I've had this before. I know my body.
Serena Williams, the tennis star. If there is ever a person who would know her body, you would think it's a professional athlete who concentrates on staying in shape and being the kind of incredibly proficient and successful athlete that she is. Linda Villarosa joins us on the line from her home in Brooklyn, New York. She's written about this for the New York Times Magazine. And joining me now here in the studio is Rebecca Dineen of the Baltimore Bureau of Maternal and Child Health. She leads Be More for Healthy Babies, an initiative of the Baltimore City Health Department. Rebecca, it's nice to meet you.
Nice to be here.
And listeners, if you'd like to join our conversation, our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWIPR. We are also streaming our conversation now on the WIPR Facebook page. So, Rebecca Dineen, tell us about Be More Healthy Babies and give us an overview of what that program entails and what you're trying to accomplish here in Baltimore.
Sure. Be More for Healthy Babies is an initiative. It's actually not a program. It brings together in a unified strategy about 150 partners that work in maternal and child health in the city. And our vision since 2009 has been that all of Baltimore's babies are born healthy, full term, and ready to thrive in healthy families. And the idea is to take a life course approach. So from the time that a baby is in the womb as a fetus all the way through when folks reach adulthood, that there are really important stages of development and all stages have to be attended to.
And the birth rates or the infant mortality rates in Baltimore have actually improved a bit over the last few years, as I understand it.
Yeah, we've had actually unprecedented decreases in infant mortality. And in fact, prior to 2009, the rate was increasing. We've seen a 36% decrease in our infant mortality rate overall and a 38% decrease in the disparity between black and white babies.
So we live in a majority black city. 60-some percent of our residents are African-American. Talk a little bit, dig a little deeper into this disparity between the white mothers and the black mothers and white babies and black babies.
Yeah, and in Baltimore City in 2009, black mothers were giving birth and about five times as many babies, black babies, were dying as white babies. And so there was a huge disparity. And as you start to disaggregate all of the data related to maternal and child health, you start to see this striking disparity between black and white moms and their children and the developmental outcomes of their children. And in order to actually reduce the maternal or infant mortality rate, both rates, there really has to be an approach that deals with the disparity as opposed to just the overall rate, because there are certain things that drive the black mortality rate that might be different from what drives the white mortality rate.
And Linda Villarosa, when you hear Serena Williams talk about her pleading with her medical staff to help her out and to do a CAT scan, and she's concerned about an aneurysm or an embolism, I guess it is. There's a piece that ProPublica and NPR published a while back in which one of the people that they interviewed for that said that the nursing culture is white, middle class, and female largely. So it is largely built around that identity, and anything that doesn't fit that identity is suspect. Is this sort of baked into the cake of the healthcare system when a woman of color comes into the OBGYN ward or comes into the emergency room or presents in any fashion to medical people?
Well, it's baked into our society, and it's just, you know, institutional racism is part of the American shame. And so healthcare providers are not immune of all kinds, including physicians. And certainly, I looked at the research out of Columbia University that was about disrespect and abuse during maternal, during childbirth. And that research was adapted for the United States from Africa. And it had been, I think it was Tanzania. The researcher had been looking at that in Tanzania. And then someone said to her, well, why don't you look at it in our own country? Because that happens here as well. And the research is new, but it was talking about the way women are not just ignored, but also treated badly sometimes. And I think, you know, that is just part of the system. And it's also what I saw when I was with Simone Landrum when she was giving birth. It wasn't like it was so terrible, but I know I wouldn't want to be treated in the same way she was treated, and I wouldn't want my daughter treated that way.
We have an email from a listener, Michelle, who says, aren't there studies that indicate what specifically these women and infants are dying during childbirth? Is there a common factor other than the fact that these women are Black? Is stress the common denominator, or could there be more insidious reasons such as disparities in healthcare? Rebecca Dineen?
Sure. We do something in the city called Fetal and Infant Mortality Review, and that review is we review all the fetal deaths in the city and then do a case review with our team. And what we've found is doing sort of an in-depth analysis that the driver of our poor birth outcomes really has to do with maternal health as the largest driver, and that would be hypertension. So hypertension, when you start to dig about into what causes hypertension, you have stress as a leading factor in hypertension. And that one can link back to a big difference between what drives white infant mortality and Black infant mortality. So hypertension plus preeclampsia are the biggest drivers in our Black maternal infant mortality rate in the city. And we
talk about what preeclampsia is for listeners who don't know.
It's a disease that occurs in pregnancy where you become very hypertensive and your limbs start to swell and you can go into a preterm birth. And so it's a hypertension and preeclampsia are a big driver of what our poor birth outcomes are in the city.
And Linda Villarosa, when we talk about stuff baked into the cake, our producer, Sienna Greaves, spoke with Dr. Michael Liu. He's the former director of the Maternal and Child Health Bureau for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And he talks about it in terms of a fight or flight instinct or a fight or flight response when you're living with daily discrimination, with daily marginalization, with daily institutional racism. It just builds up and can have outcomes. I'm interested that earlier in the program you talked about it's not just with pregnancy and birth outcomes, but it can also be causal or found to be an impactful dimension of other diseases, you know, diabetes, et cetera. Is that what you have found, Linda?
And yes, and when you talk about fight or flight, it's that your body is readying you for to lead, you know, to take action. And so it's the systems of the body revving up. And that's good because if you're in danger, you do want your body systems, whether it's your endocrine system, your heart, your pulse rate, you want them to increase so that you can run away or fight back. But if it happens over and over and over again, because of daily insults or things that are beyond insults, discrimination, it's not healthy for your body to keep revving up your endocrine system, your heart rate, your blood pressure. It's unhealthy in the long term.
Linda Villarosa is the director of the journalism program at the City College of New York. She is a contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine. She published a piece last April that caught our eye called Why America's Black Mothers and Babies Are in a Life or Death Crisis. Rebecca Dineen joins me here in the studio. She's the assistant commissioner of the Baltimore Bureau of Maternal and Child Health. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. We're talking about racial disparities and the impact it has on birth outcomes, both for mothers and for babies. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWYPR. You can follow us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming our conversation. Let's go to the phones to Dave in Dundalk. Dave, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm a former business and economist type person. I've been very interested in these kinds of numbers because they indicate the overall health of our society. I did a look recently at life expectancy globally by state, also by over 3,000 counties, and found basically that the poorer you are, the faster you die. That if you divide each of those into deciles, crunch the numbers, that basically the richest can't live longer than the second richest, and so on, all the way down the line. So my primary conclusion out of all of this was that, you know, the things at the lower end of the spectrum, stress, diabetes, all those kinds of things, basically impact people because they're poor, and they die faster because they're poor. So my question overall, and then I found some surprises, which is that some rural counties throughout this country really have third world mortality rates. You know, we as a country rank 64th in the world. And also some surprises, which is that it's even worse for Native American women on reservations and people in reservations. Mm-hmm. And then some pleasant surprises.
And Dave, let me ask you, do you want to pose a particular question?
My overarching question is, when you adjust for income, how do these rates compare to poor whites in West Virginia, Mississippi, and to Native American women?
All right.
Thank you. I'll take my answer up. Yeah.
I appreciate the call. Rebecca, do you have any insight into that
kind of research? What we understand is when you adjust for income, black infant mortality rates for women who are educated and in wealthy households are the same or worse than women who are white who only have a high school education or less. And so if you use education as a proxy for poverty, the point is that black women who are healthy and educated or who are educated and doing well in their lives are still experiencing extremely poor birth outcomes. And we see it in fetal and infant mortality review. We do maternal interviews. We speak to people. It is not what one expects and why it's so important to be addressing it.
And Linda Villarosa, you talk about the insidious nature of institutional and systemic societal racism. This underlying stress affects daily behavior of people, right? I mean, sometimes I guess it's difficult to figure out the chicken and the egg here in that if you're exposed to this kind of stress on a daily basis and you grow up for 15 years, 17 years, 25 years, and you give birth to a baby, it's a cumulative thing here. I mean, and that stress, it's not just affecting the experience of that particular pregnancy. It is affecting how you have lived your life up until the time where you're having a baby.
That's true. And I was thinking also about the last person that was speaking, and I understand that, you know, that it's so hard to believe some of these numbers, and I didn't believe it at the beginning. I kept saying, this is an issue that really is about poverty. But when just, Rebecca, what you said was those are the same statistics about the education that surprised me so much. And that also, I asked Dr. Geronimus, I said, what does it look like for me to, you know, I'm a black woman, I have a job, I have a master's degree, I have health insurance, you know, but why did I have this low birth weight baby? And she started breaking down sort of like this idea of the daily insults. And she mentioned a few that I had in the past month, around race. And I could feel my heart beating so hard. And she said to me, we were on the phone, and she said, is your heart beating really hard? I said, yes. Oh my God, just talking about it is making me feel this, you know, way. It was very interesting to go through that, and certainly this is poverty makes everything worse. Living in a place that doesn't have the same access to health care, to healthy food, to open space makes everything worse, but still race is a key factor here.
In U.S. News and World Report, a researcher named Tanae Lewis, who's an associate professor of epidemiology at Emory University in Atlanta, says, Rebecca Dineen, that there is an overwhelming body of research on discrimination and health that indicates that self-reported experiences of discrimination are an important risk factor for poor and mental physical health. Right, physical health. It's not just psychological. And this, you know, Professor Lewis cites an overwhelming body of research. Again, to Linda's point here, you know, it's hard to believe, but this is not stuff that's being concocted.
No, I mean, what we say in Be More for Healthy Babies for what's killing America's black infants, it's not race. So it's not differences in maternal behavior and genetics. They don't explain the racial disparity. It's not poverty or education. though they matter, these factors don't fully explain the disparity. Racism is really the difference, and it's the experience of discrimination, interpersonal and institutional. Racial, residential segregation is a big factor. Biological, and then the biological response to chronic stress, which creates this allostatic load that people talk about.
Allostatic load. Explain that term before we take a break.
And not being a medical person, I might just explain it just in a very simple way, which is that as you have these constant microaggressions, your response, that fight or flight, you're constantly in a hyper tense state that creates a chronic stress in your body, and that's measured through an allostatic load. And we can see that these loads are much higher in women with hypertension and hence in our Black mothers.
Rebecca Dineen is an assistant commissioner of the Baltimore Bureau of Maternal and Child Health. She's going to stick with us to take your calls and comments when we come back from a break. Professor Linda Villarosa is the director of the journalism program at the City College of New York. She's the author of a New York Times Magazine article last April called Why America's Black Mothers and Babies Are in a Life or Death Crisis. We'll link to that article on the WIPR website. Linda Villarosa, thank you so much for your time, and enjoy the soccer game with your daughter tonight. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. This has been really interesting, and nice meeting you, Rebecca.
Nice meeting you.
When we come back, we will be joined by Andrea Williams. She is a doula, so we'll talk about her work supporting women during their pregnancies. You can join us at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWIPR. We are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page as well. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you're just joining us, we have been examining the body of research that demonstrates the effects of racism and institutional discrimination on the health of African-American women, a group that suffers from the highest rates of maternal and infant death. The CDC estimates that every year between 700 and 900 women of all races die during childbirth in the United States. We are one of only 13 countries in the world where the deaths of women related to pregnancy is higher than it was 25 years ago. And the death rate for African-American women is higher than that of Mexico, where half of that population lives in poverty. The numbers are shocking. This issue is complex. And helping us understand what efforts are being made in Baltimore to address this problem is Rebecca Dineen of Be More for Healthy Babies. That's an initiative of the Baltimore City Health Department. And we're joined now by Andrea N. Williams. She is a doula who supports families during their birth journeys. She's a member of the Community Advisory Board for Be More for Healthy Babies. And she's a member of the Working Group for the Black Mamas Matter Alliance, a national organization that focuses on maternal health. She's also the co-founder of an Inzuri Malkia Birth Collective, which is here in Baltimore. Ms. Williams, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You are also, listeners, welcome to be part of our conversation at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWIPR, and we are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. So, Andrea Williams, what's the difference between a doula and a midwife?
A doula is a non-medical support for mom and her family. We provide emotional, psychological, and physical support for her, both before birth and after birth.
So how much before and how much after? When do you get involved in the process and how long do you stick around?
For me, I like to get involved as soon as possible to help her and to adjust, and postpartum, as long as she wants me.
Mm-hmm. And can you give us an example of the kind of work that you do with these expecting mothers and new mothers?
Here in Baltimore, our efforts are what we describe as wraparound services, not just birth support, not just prenatal support or postpartum support, but also things that she may need. Is she eating properly? Does she have access to proper food? Is she drinking water? Does she have transportation to her clinic appointments? Is she understanding what the doctors and nurses are telling her? Anything and everything to get her and her family and her baby to a positive outcome.
So are you in the delivery room when the babies are born?
Yes, I am.
And so I heard maybe it was you that described it to our producer when you spoke with Sienna Greaves yesterday. The midwife catches the baby and then...
I hold the mama.
And Rebecca Dineen, the doula program is part and parcel of the Be More for Healthy Babies initiative, right?
Andrea has a wonderful doula program. Be More for Healthy Babies supports the doula program, and also we are looking at developing scholarship program for doulas to help expand the workforce of doulas in Baltimore City. It's a great addition to our workforce and a really necessary one in terms of sort of trying to undo some of the discriminatory practices in our systems.
Let's go back to the phones. We have, as I understand it, a pediatrician on the line, Dr. Ann Bailovitz. Dr. Bailovitz, welcome to Midday, and thanks for calling.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am. You are on the air.
Great. So first, just wanted to say thank you to Rebecca. She and I had the pleasure of working at the City Health Department for many years, and her efforts have just been superb. I mean, it's a notion of how difficult this problem is to turn around because she's been working on it for 9-10 years already, and she really has made inroads. On behalf of the program, I wanted to ask her so that she could share with us, and I apologize if you already mentioned the statistics, but what has happened over the course of your efforts, Rebecca, with the infant mortality rate specifically, and how does that progress compare with what's been happening, say, in neighboring states or cities of which, you know, you're familiar with the statistics? And just as a sidebar comment, when one's looking at the problem, certainly looking at mortality is very important. But another way that CDC presents this data is years of productive life lost. And I think when you do that, you know, given that these children are so young, the impact is really staggering. And I think gives us all energy to continue to work on the issue.
Well, Doctor, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. And Rebecca, I mean, we mentioned the first part of the program is the infant mortality rate is improving. It's going down here in Baltimore. How does that compare with other neighboring states, for example?
Yeah, it's decreased by 36%, and we've seen a decrease in the disparity by about 38%. That is a greater increase. There is some national decreases. This is a more precipitous decrease than we're seeing nationally. And when we compare ourselves to other cities, we've been invited, I think, by now 25 or 30 cities to talk to them about what we're doing because it's unprecedented. And a lot of cities in Ohio, a lot of New York City we've talked to, we work with the southern states, many, many states. So what we're doing, I think, is something in the right direction. I think work that Andrea brings is extremely powerful and positive in the right direction. We've just started introducing sort of using an anti-racist lens to our work through the People's Institute for Survival and Beyond. And so I think the direction we're going in is going to be even more important.
And Andrea Williams, you're a mom. You're a woman of color. There are probably a whole lot of people who are treating the news of this data skeptically, who are saying, how can there be a correlation between racism and poor health? On the other hand, those same people may also readily identify the veracity of a claim that says if you're stressed out for whatever reason, if you've got stress, that's going to affect your health. It's going to affect how you sleep, which is then going to affect perhaps your immune system, which is then going to affect, you know, all sorts of problems. When we talk about, and the doctor who just called, you know, talks about days and hours and months of lost work. I mean, racism is a very specific kind of stress that is only an experience that people of color have to endure. When you talk to the clients you work with, part of what you do with them, as I understand it, is you offer relaxation techniques. You offer things that are going to, you know, address the stress that they're under.
Yes. For me, as you alluded to, this is not a new issue. I got into birth work because of my own traumatic birth experience, and that's been 25 years ago. And I try to educate my moms about the experiences that they're going to have, the things that they will, you know, face when they go into these spaces that are predominantly white. At the same time, not put added stress on her. Even the National Public Health Association has deemed, you know, violence in our community as a public health issue. So when you are Black, you're a woman, and you live in Baltimore City, even before you get pregnant, you're already at a heightened level of stress. When you add pregnancy on that, that just, when we talk about the whole weathering experience, the whole fight or flight experience, our moms tend to check out of the system at that point. Because they already know what they're going to experience, how they're going to be looked at when they come into the clinic, how they're going to be treated. You know, a lot of our moms, they have had traumatic birth experiences prior to their present pregnancy. So they already know and they already expect to be at a negative deficit. So, you know, why even bother? So our efforts are to change that mentality, both with our moms and with the institutions that they come in contact with.
U.S. News and World Report talked about a study in which a researcher reports that if you're African American or Latino and you present to the emergency room with a broken leg or a kidney stone, for example, you're less likely to be given analgesics at the recommended level. We have a caller who I think wants to talk about that. Forgive me if I'm pronouncing your name wrong. It's either Regan or Reagan in Baltimore. Welcome to Midday.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Thank you so much for having this really important discussion. I just wanted to introduce exactly what you said to the discussion, is that in addition to the chronic stress of being a person of color navigating this world and the allostatic load associated with that, there is discrimination and racism built into the medical system that causes unequal treatment of women that exacerbates these outcomes. I'm an obstetrician-gynecologist who works in Baltimore City, and I see this firsthand. And so I think that's something important to add to the discussion because, you know, we can't meditate this away. We can't yoga this away. There's something intrinsic to the healthcare system that needs to face itself also as a part of this issue. Otherwise, we'll never increase and improve the outcomes for women of color in this community.
And may I ask, I mean, is this anecdotal on your part, or have you read research about this? I mean, is it your personal experience that you're seeing racism played out in the OBGYN wards that you're working in?
Yes, so certainly anecdotally, and then there's been other experiences in other types of medical practices, like the research that you just pointed to suggest that people are treated differently by race. There was another study done at the, I believe, University of Virginia Medical Center to suggest that medical students and residents treated people differently according to pain based on their race and ethnicity.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for that call. I appreciate it. And Rebecca Dineen, it's also true that for the first time in just the last 2 or 3 years, it's the case that there are more women in medical school than men now. So, you know, putatively, we're going to have a lot more women doctors, certainly, than we used to. And at some point, we're going to have a whole lot more women doctors than men doctors. I wonder how that's going to impact this particular issue of maternal and infant mortality.
Yeah, I mean, I think always lived experience helps when you're dealing in situations. I think, you know, one of the things is I think we actually have to be very pointed in our work. And we do, we are working toward getting everybody in the Maternal Child Health Bureau and all our partners trained in undoing racism. And we're working with our providers who we have heard from multiple times through our work, needing to have these kinds of trainings as well. So,
all right. Well, I want to thank you, Rebecca Dineen, from the Baltimore City Health Department, as well as Andrea Williams, who is a doula and a co-founder of the Inzuri Malkia Birth Collective. Thanks to you both. Appreciate your coming in.
Thank you.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to have some gift-giving ideas for the book lovers on your list with Heidi Daniel and Paula Willey. They will tell you what you want to put in those stockings that you're looking to stuff. We want to thank Joe's Squared for providing lunch today. They also provide catering and a party room for all of your holiday events. You can find out more at joessquared.com. I'm Tom Hall. Appreciate your listening. Have a great day.